welcome to the very first episode of Echoes and Influence, a podcast for the South African PR and reputation industry. My name is Joanne Smith.
And I'm Francois Rank.
And we are very excited to share this series with you, and we hope you enjoy. The series will delve into all aspects of reputation management, from technology to crisis to media relations and stakeholder relations and storytelling. And it really is aimed at people of all level. We want to share the stories from the people that know best, and we want to inspire people who are still learning. I think the most important thing to start off with is our disclaimer.
Which is?
That there are people that are a lot smarter than us.
Oh yes, there are definitely people that are a lot smarter than us. We'll be engaging with them or having them in the room to have conversations with us in the future. And that's our goal, is to get these people and their insights into the room so that they can impart their knowledge. Not give away trade secrets. We don't want you to give away trade secrets, but to impart their knowledge. Yeah, and to inspire, like you say, young professionals coming up in the industry.
Are there any trade secrets?
I don't think there are, but I think a lot of people in the industry believe that there are. It's like media training. The techniques in media training are the techniques. It's just about your experience and your knowledge and being able to teach those techniques in a way that resonates with the audience. But I mean, key messaging is key messaging, and blocking and bridging is blocking and bridging, and storytelling is storytelling. So I think that's an example of where people believe they're trade secrets, but they aren't actually trade secrets.
I think the one thing you and I, Frankie, have in common is that we have always been so privileged to sit in the room with really smart people. We were working in agencies with incredible people that we could learn from. And maybe that's missing these days.
Yeah, I think that's probably the inspiration in a lot of ways for this, right? Is the conversations we've had around the incredible people that we sat in the room with, the incredible agencies that we've worked for and in, the incredible clients that we've been able to work on and help, but also learn from. The stature of people that I personally had the privilege of working with, especially at the start of my comms career, I think was invaluable to shaping my career, right?
Agreed, yeah.
And I don't know if you feel the same way about this, but I think perhaps that's not necessarily happening today. And not because those people don't exist, but just because of the way we work has changed. People are working from home. They're working remotely. They don't get to spend as much time with those people and learn as much as they could. And that what we're trying to do here is create that space.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I just remember coming up in the industry, and I was so fortunate to get to work with amazing people. And I know at some point in my career, I realized that I was fairly ambitious. I don't know if anyone is aware of that.
No, we were never aware of the fact that you were ambitious.
Not at all. And fairly headstrong. And I knew that if I really wanted to get far, I had to get in one of the big agencies, because the level of exposure to the clients they were working on was so amazing. And just the pitch process and being exposed and sitting in the boardroom with that level of CEO and things like that was so incredible. The exposure to the learning and the conversations, and we're privy to so much information that the rest of the world isn't privy to. Mm-hmm. And it was a massive game changer for me to be there. And so now, working on my own, I mean, I started my agency, you know, 10 years ago this year. And although, like, I connect to people all day, don't get me wrong, but the challenge is I'm not sitting in a room with other PR professionals, even now. And again, please see point one with disclaimer that there are people a lot smarter than us. But that's the point. I want to reconnect to people and ask them, what's going on? What are you guys seeing? What's some of the clever stuff you've done? What can I learn from? What can I learn from? Never mind anyone who's listening. I think that was why I wanted to start the podcast, because I have these days where you just work in isolation and you feel like you're always doing the same set of things for people. So I remember just doing a Google. I was like, well, maybe there's a podcast I can listen to about PR and reputation management. And I went online and I Googled. I literally found one that was a UK-based podcast and one that was a US-based podcast. And they were really interesting, but I think that South Africa, we've got such a different market, and we know that. And I just feel like the work we do here has got so many things that we have to be aware of. Mm-hmm. And one of the things we want to talk about is storytelling and cultural sensitivities. And you and I have both worked with big international brands when they come in, and no disrespect to them, I'm very privileged to have worked, but we've had to say to them, guys, this is Africa. Don't come and tell us how to do things. We will tell you how things are done.
100%.
Yeah.
I did a similar thing to you. I also went and Googled, and I actually found a South African podcast, but it hasn't been updated in 2 or 3 years. And I think there's definitely a gap here in terms of having these conversations, right? And again, you talk about cultural cultural nuances. An example of that is somebody who runs a big global agency, runs the South African branch of that. What are the challenges around that, right? Mm. And you're not necessarily going to find that in a textbook. You're going to find that from speaking to the person who's the MD of a big global agency, South African office, and can say, our challenge is we have a global client and they do this in one market and they come here and they try to do the same thing and it just doesn't work here.
Mm.
And not only that, but then also explaining to young professionals how they navigate that challenge. Because I think that's the thing. We all know that there are challenges from a cultural nuance point of view. The value comes from the person who's been in that space and can impart the knowledge and say to our audience, this is what I experienced. This is how we managed it. This is how we navigated that. I think that's the value that we're going
to
bring.
Yeah, I think so. I think it probably brings us to a good point where now we go back to, again, C.1, why us?
Mm-hmm.
We always have a point one. I think we're going to reference it quite a bit. But
I think eventually the other thing about us is we're both opinionated and we might say some stuff
never.
In episodes that might grate some people or might rub some people up the wrong way. But the whole point is if it stirs conversation, great, because we want you to come here.
Yeah.
We want you to say, you know what, guys, I heard what you said or I heard what that person said and I don't agree. I'd like to come and talk to you about what I experienced. I think that's the value that we're going to bring is disparate or diverse voices having conversations and having hard conversations about PR and reputation management.
Yeah, exactly. I think that, like for me, I just think back to the people I've had a privilege of working for, where they are now. I have like this amazing network and I am here by virtue of the fact that I've worked with them and for them.
Mm-hmm.
Between you and I, we have, I promise, with Street Cred, we have mm-hmm. worked on some major brands. And some
major crises.
And major crises. And we'll talk about highs and lows at some point. That's going to be...
And lessons learned.
And lessons learned. There's some real pearlers in the waiting in the wings there. But maybe, I think just for the benefit of people who don't know us, maybe just talk a little bit about your background and like where you come from and what do you bring
and to the how I ended up here
and how Frankus did you end up here?
Yeah, so it's I don't know if it's an interesting story, but I started off as a newspaper journalist. That's what I studied at Rhodes. I got to write for the Sunday Times at the sort of zenith of my newspaper career, and then moved from that into comms. I worked in the 2010 FIFA World Cup as the head writer there. So I spent 2 years at the LOC writing for the LOC, which of course is an incredible experience being exposed to international marketing. And then from there went into public relations and content strategy. And that's how we met actually, because I got upset one day and resigned from my job and sent an email to Maropa Communications, which is where you and I met, and ended up being the news editor at Maropa and worked then from there in content, from Europa into Fleischmann Hillard, from Fleischmann Hillard into Clockwork for a little bit, and then into corporate, dipped my toe in corporate, found out it wasn't for me, and then went out on my own 4 or 5 months ago. My experience has always been in content. Media relations was something that I not steered clear of, but I did less of, and I think the challenge was those people were my friends. But my journalism experience gave me valuable insight into being on the other side of the coin, and that's, I think, where I always brought value. And we were lucky enough to work together on a lot of clients because of that. Me on the one side of the coin and you on the other side of the coin, which is quite interesting that we're sitting opposite each other at a table now having this conversation. That is enough about me, and I've rambled on. What about you, Jo? Tell us a little bit more about yourself.
So I am a classically trained PR and media studies. I studied for 3 years and... little known fact, I suppose if there was ever a platform to boast, it would be this, and I hate it. I did actually, in my year final exams, I got the highest mark in the country for my PR exam. So I think my fate was sealed.
That doesn't surprise me.
Aw, thanks. So I went to work in agencies and classic PR agencies. Well, actually, no, first of all, I went to work in an auditing firm. I was in the marketing department. I was a junior marketing assistant, which I think is a position on the same level as plankton at that point in one's career, but managed to...
Like being a cub reporter.
Yeah. So I think I just printed other people's papers and like carried it to their desks, and I thought I was contributing. Anyway, there we go. That's where everyone's got to start somewhere. And then I worked my way up in agencies. Eventually in, I think it was 2007, actually, Max Gebhardt, who was the ex-managing editor of Business Report, he had moved across to Maropa. And he headhunted me from the agency I was at, and I joined, and it was amazing. Like my 4 point about I wanted to work for a really big agency, it was that moment. And so I crossed the floor to a really big agency, and I loved it. I mean, the exposure to people, I mean, I think my eyes were like on stalks when I just like walked in, and we used to sit and have to read newspapers every morning, and I had to read a newspaper across from like former editors of The Star and the Rand Daily Mail and people who'd stood in, like, our CEO, Peter Mann, like he'd stood in queues in apartheid. He'd purposely stood in the wrong queues. And now I was just little old me sitting with these people. It was incredible. And I just loved Maropa. I learned so, so much. And then I think the pinnacle was interesting because in 2014, I was appointed a director and a shareholder of the agency, which was a fantastic achievement for someone who was in their mid-30s at the time. I was really, really young. But it actually just didn't work out for me. I realized about 6 months later that I just couldn't cope with the level of work. I was working across 3 different regions. You and I met with the PE stuff, but I worked with the PE team. I worked with the Cape Town team to work on a certain number of clients. I managed a Joburg team. I think at some point there was like 24 clients and 30 team members. And what I learned in those moments was that shit does not roll downhill. It comes firmly up. And I actually had such burnout, and I remember going on a holiday. So this is a very long answer to your very short question.
Yeah, it's fine.
But I remember going on a holiday, and I had such burnout. I think it took me about 2 weeks to kind of come back to the person that this person. Mm-hmm. And this person genuinely is an optimist. I'm like, you know me. Like, I'm an energetic person. I'm an optimist. I always see the silver lining. I will always try and make a plan. I'm genuinely the same person. And I just found I'd been in like a foul mood for over a year. Mm-hmm. And I was like, I don't want to be that person anymore. And I realized I had to make a change, and I had to resign. So I thought I could move to other agencies, but you know, when you get high up in agencies, there aren't a lot of positions to move from. Mm-hmm. Like the number of positions are so small. And actually it was Julian Gwillem from Aprio who said to me, he did offer me a position. He said to me, please don't take it.
That's an interesting piece of advice.
Which is interesting. And I was like, all right, well, I mean, that's not great. But he's like, please don't take it, Joe. He said, please go and work for yourself. Because he said, what's going to happen is you're going to take the position and you're going to be great at it. But a year down the line, you're going to think, I should have worked myself, and you're going to leave anyway. Mm-hmm. So he said, just start now. I said to him, well, I mean, that's fine. But then when I do this and come knocking at your door for work so I can fund and have income, then you better give me some work. And he was like, okay, cool. And that's how Pillar 9 was born. I realized I wanted to work with clients where I felt like I really could make a difference. I knew how I did things, and I knew that when I'd worked on clients, the way I did things really made an impact to them. It wasn't just about media space. It was about like bottom line impact on businesses. Mm-hmm. And I think that's where the separation of PR and reputation management came in for me. I wasn't a news function anymore. I was actually working on words, but also operations. And so that's how Pillar 9 started. I think I had one client. I think my first paycheck I got was 7,500 rand. I had a small cry in my garden that somebody had paid me money. Like, yeah. They paid me. And then since then it's grown. And now I find myself in this incredible space where the work I did at Maropa towards the end, working with CEOs and really managing very strategically their public profiles, has paid off, because now I get to work with chefs to do that. And I work in this very reputation focused space where it's all chicken and egg. We manage the public profiles of the chefs and we look at everything in their business. And it's amazing the work I get to do. And the work I see, like, it has a bottom line impact. Businesses have grown. People have jobs. Like, it's just, I think that it's just like I have purpose. Like I'm so lucky to work for myself and in the industry I am, because I actually have a purpose. But that brings us to what we're talking about today. Frankie, what are we talking about today?
So what we're talking about today is why what we do is so important, right? Why PR, why public relations, why reputation management? It's the best place to start.
Right? Fair.
Building a reputation is very important for any business, in your case, for a chef or for any personality, because it enables them to reach their business goals, right? I think that's a big part of what we do, is helping businesses meet their strategic objectives by profiling them in the media. But the other reason why we do what we do is important is because when businesses are in crisis, or when personalities are in crisis, the reputation that we've built for them or on their behalf makes them more resilient to crisis.
Yeah.
I think it's very, very important. That's what I think is what we do is important. We don't sell products, right? We engender more trust in your business and make people believe in your brand or your business more so that it's easier for you to do those things.
Yeah. You know, when I was studying, I remember they showed us this model of where like PR sits in relation to like marketing. And it was either they were equal, or one was bigger, or one was smaller. And they also used to say, like, you can't operate in a vacuum. And I don't think I really understood what that meant when I was studying. And I don't think anyone really explained it to me, in my own defense. But now I understand it. And to your point about building resilience, resilient businesses aren't just words. It's, and this for me is the difference between PR and reputation management, is reputation management has an operations function as well. So it's building a business with the business units, with the people, with the ethics, with the processes, mm-hmm. with the culture that provides you with a platform to be a sustainable and a resilient business, right, that people can then talk about in whatever light you want them to talk about.
Which is what the public relations is, right?
Yes.
It's just when we start then talking about your business and we start telling people about your business, to use a very, very old term, in earned spaces.
Yes.
Right? But I use that old term because the other thought I had was, I think what we've do has become even more valuable because of how the landscape has changed.
Yeah.
And by that I mean, when you and I started out, it was TV, radio, newspapers. And now those platforms are so much bigger. And whereas social media has blown up, but not just social media, but the platforms, the number of platforms that people are in. And what we do is so important because there are so many more people telling stories about brands and telling stories about businesses, that if you are not telling your story, they are going to own it.
Mm.
And I think what we do is important is in terms of shaping narratives and key messages and telling those people, telling those businesses stories out there, is we allow them to own their narratives. We facilitate owning their own narratives, right?
Yeah.
You brought up an interesting thing in a conversation we had a while ago around, and I'd never thought of this, around how Hello Peter has become a challenging space for you from a comms point of view as a social media platform.
Yeah, and like Google. I mean,
in the old days. Yes, we are old. We're old.
In the old days, we didn't have Google Review. And now, you know, the work we do, you know, probably with maybe any consumer facing brand, there is an online review element that also now forms part of your perception management function. How do you negate something? How do you flip something around? How do you show that you cared? How do you comment? How do you take conversations offline? And I think like the nature of the space changing. I mean, I remember doing a Facebook competition in 2009. And I think I'd love to say it was the first one, but I'm not, but it was one of. We had a Facebook competition. I mean, now you'd like literally insert an eye roll if someone said, let's do a competition on Facebook. You're like, welcome to back to the 1990s. They called, they want their campaign back.
That's like that, please can you make my business go viral? No.
Can you
make me a viral video? No, I can't.
I love those. We should do an episode on, or we ask people to send in like their most random requests
from a client.
Like, please can you make me a viral video? Yes, no problem. I'll have it to you first thing in the morning.
Yeah, I want to be on the front page of the Business Day. That was my
like, well, that can be arranged.
It can be arranged, but for all the wrong reasons.
What do you want to be on the front page for?
Exactly.
And then am I going to have to clean it up afterwards?
I bring up the Business Day and we joke about it, but that's the other flip side of the coin of what we do, right? Is that the spaces that we land our clients, or the coverage that we get them, is a lot more reputable, right? And it has a lot more weight behind it, because joking or not, being on the front page of the Business Day is a big deal, right? It's still a big deal to be on the front page of the Business Day if it's from a positive
perspective. And if you're on the front page for the wrong reasons, it's an even bigger deal.
It's the damages.
I was about to swear there. I just worried myself.
The damage is exacerbated, right? Because of the credibility of those platforms, right?
Yeah.
And this is no disrespect to marketing people and advertising people, and this might be the first controversial thing I say, but it's more valuable for me to get coverage for my client in a newspaper than for you to buy advertising space. It has a lot more credibility because it's coming through the lens of a journalist.
Absolutely. And ads you can pay, you can put whatever words you want to. You can say how amazing
you control exactly what lands in that space.
Completely.
We don't have that control.
Yeah.
I think that's the other value, is that if I get you onto, and I'm going to use an example here that also that shows my age, but onto a Bruce Whitfield, and I'll tell you my Bruce Whitfield story later.
Oh, I'm excited.
But if I get you on, in the old days, if I got you onto 702 on Bruce Whitfield's show,
sure.
I mean, that is manna from heaven.
Yeah.
Right?
You'd made it.
You were done. If I did that in a month for my clients, I didn't have to do any other work for the rest of the month. I'm done. You want Bruce Whitfield? I'm done. I've earned my retainer for the month. But it was because of the credibility of Bruce's show, because of who he was, because of the gravitas of it, right? And because he was tough. So if you did a good interview on Bruce Whitfield, which is the other part that we had to manage, was media training our clients so that they did good interviews in those tough spaces. If you did that, the value was immeasurable, right? And that's the difficulty about what we do.
It's very esoteric.
Yeah, that's a great word. But it's very ethereal. It's very difficult to measure and go, pin it down.
Yes.
You know, I bought this much advertising space. It takes this many eyeballs and it's worth this much. It's very difficult. We're going to talk about measurement, but it's very difficult.
I wasn't going to say a word. I was going to keep quiet.
It's very difficult to measure the value of what we do outside of those empirical measures
that
are AVE and ROI and all those terms, which young people will explain to you later. But I think that's the other thing is, I'm waffling a bit, but the other thing is that sometimes the value that we bring is immeasurable to our clients in terms of getting them into important spaces and talking to audiences that they want to talk to directly with credibility.
Yeah.
Because that's the other thing. We bring the credibility.
Maybe what you're also kind of, what you're saying outside of it, and maybe this is where my personality shines, being a type A control freak, is that I often question my sanity about being in this industry because you can only control everything up to a point.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the upside of that is, like, you know, you've developed you've done the strategy, you've developed all the content, you've media trained the CEO, you've worked with the company and everything is going along the lines. You've introduced them to the journalist from Business Day. They go and have an interview, they say all the right things. And then when everyone leaves the room, you absolutely lose control.
Mm-hmm.
And so
give up control.
You give up control because the journalist goes away, they take the interview, but you have no say about where they're going to be pulling other things from, what context they're putting the quotes against. And I think, you know, we often get asked, I mean, I'm sure you, if you had a penny for every time a client has said to you, can we see the article before it goes to print or whatever? And I mean, you can ask, but you can't.
It goes on the list of things, weird things. Yeah.
Yes. Viral video, can I see the article? And, you know, that's the scary thing. But I think the good thing is, I think there's a lot of stuff you can do before that, as I said earlier, to get to the point where you've really done as much as you can.
Mm-hmm.
You've done as much as you can. You've prepped, you've looked, you've strategized, you've contentized, whatever the right word is. And there you go.
Contextualized. That's the word.
But then it goes out, and then the media, and then the coverage, and then actually, what is the measurement? Is the measurement, it's not your AVE of the article. That's just one. What it actually should be, it should be connected back to measurement systems in the companies to track the proper measure. Is it a bum in a seat?
Mm-hmm.
Is it another car sold? Is it a bank account taken up? Is it more inflows into an investment company? Like, these are actually the things that matter. That's the difference between PR and reputation management. Because my job is to grow a sustainable business, not to get you coverage.
See, now that's an interesting conversation. Because I was always taught, and the term we use is, it's not my job to sell more sneakers for you. My job is to make it easier for you to sell more sneakers.
Yes.
Right? And then, but now you're talking about empirical measures that are business measures internally.
Yeah, it has to connect.
It has to connect. And that's the difference, right? From a measurement point of view, between public relations and reputation management is what you're saying.
Yeah.
Because you're saying reputation management is the tool that you use as a comms professional to help to build a sustainable business and business narrative.
Yeah.
Right? And public relations is the tool you use to tell the story about that business that exists.
Exactly.
That you've helped to build.
Exactly. And right? I think it's important, like, for young people coming into the industry to understand the difference of that. And I think it makes them look better to clients when they think about things beyond the press. So press and coverage, whatever, or, you know, engagements on social media is important, mm-hmm. and it has its place. But I think it speaks volumes to how you think and how you think about business when you include things like, but what is the actual business metric here? And how do I connect back into a system? I think it shows that you think beyond, that you understand there's a bigger thing at play. It's not just about a press release.
It's not just about a press release, because I used to work for an agency where they want to pitch. And the pitch, they want to pitch by walking into the room and saying to the client, we'll never write a press release for you ever again, which I thought was brave at the time. I don't know if that's necessarily realistic. I think there are a myriad of tools, but I do think there's still value in the old tools that we use in terms
Agreed.
Of putting a press release together, writing a media motivation. I still think those things are very, very important for us as comms professionals. I think, do we need to understand the digital landscape 100%? Do we need to understand how those platforms work 100%? But I think storytelling is, as an example, because I'm a storyteller, storytelling is storytelling and works across platform, right? If you've got a great, authentic story to tell and you know how to shape that skillfully, it doesn't matter what platform it's in. Then it becomes the vessel that you are packaging that story in becomes important, right?
Yeah.
It's an interesting topic and conversation that I think we'll have to, that I think experts, somebody like you always talk about, people who are much smarter than us can have conversations about. I wanted to get back to the measurement thing. And again, people are a lot more cleverer than we are. We'll talk about measurement. Do we do ourselves a disservice in this industry because the conversation we often have is, you spoke about it, is that we're a strategic imperative, right? But the measurement we give to people is AVE and return on investment, mm-hmm. which are very much sort of marketing measurements.
Yeah.
Right? And that's great in a board pack, but does that get you in the room to have a conversation about reputation capital with the CEO?
No.
So how do we do that?
I think, so if for PR people, if you're wanting to sit at the boardroom table with the head of ops and the head of IT and the whatever, the CMO and whatever it is, then you have to treat the function with the same level of importance as they do. The same level of importance that finance does, IT, operations, HR, and they all have their metrics. So, but PR and reputation management like spans across all of those. Mm-hmm. We have a say in all of those. So why must our reporting be isolated? Our reporting has to connect to other people. And I feel like we're going off on a little episodic tangent on its own here.
I want to bring it back, but I want you to finish your point. Then I've got a point, and then we can talk about personal stories maybe.
Oh, good.
The more we talk about it, the more I realize it's an episode that we're going to have a conversation about later. So let's cut it there. It's an interesting topic of conversation.
But I think what's interesting is we talk about the people. I mean, I learned that from somebody else.
Right.
There was someone I met in my career who said, you can't just give them this. How else are you going to report? How are you going to have your say? And I think that's, so now how do we teach people that now? Can we provide the listeners of this podcast with information to better their careers and be better? That's what we're trying to do. So who is the expert on measuring? Who is the expert on beyond the media right. coverage person that we can get in here? And how do we replicate those instances where you and I learn things standing in an agency? How do we replicate that where we're turning the industry into its own agency and we're now all in the same room together?
That's a great metaphor, actually.
We're all in the same room. So how do we connect people? We have this amazing thing called technology that we all like pedal to our clients every day, but are we using it properly ourselves?
Mm.
And so this podcast is a way to unite everybody and teach someone something.
Mm-hmm.
Teach them something about media training. Teach them something about entering awards or not. Teach them something about dealing with different difficult clients. Difficult business ethical situation. How do you deal with that? This is the opportunity and this is the platform for them to do that. And on that note, that is the end of episode one.
Thanks, Joe. That was fun. I didn't realize it was going to be so much fun.
I know, but we are fun. And next week, we're going to have even more fun.
How? How are we going to have more fun?
How can we possibly have more fun? Because next week, we're talking about something that I think is a basic building block of the work we do, which is media relations.
Yep. Very, very important. How do we build those relationships with the people we are partnering with to tell our clients' stories?
Absolutely. So please join us. And thank you for listening. Please like and share, follow or don't, either or.
No, follow. Don't say follow. Or don't.
Please follow.
Follow. Please follow.
Please follow. Bye.
Bye, guys.